This is the FS podcast hosted by Exadel. Exadel are the leading provider of digital transformation, managed services and staff augmentation for the financial markets. Today, we're joined by Gregory Pepin. Gregory is the CEO of IOFinit. Hi, Gregory. It's lovely to meet you.
Hi, it's lovely to meet you as well.
Could you tell us a bit about T+1 in the US? I was reading a little bit about it recently. Do you feel that financial institutions are prepared effectively for T+1?
The settlement on T+2 that is linked to equity is directly related to the fact that you have many parties involved in the settlement of a transaction of a trade, because here you're talking about trades. So you have the two banks, the two brokers, and then you have the settlement agent or settlement agency, and then you have the stock, the party that provide the stock, and that's why you are T+2. Technically, could they do T+1? Yes, they can. Technically, they could. The only problem of doing T+1 over T+2 is they would have to probably impact the short rules. They would have to probably impact delivery of the stock and the cash they have on hand, which will cause them, make them less money. Because the good thing about banking, you will understand that, is it's all about inefficiencies. Banks make money on inefficiencies. So, for example, if you hold money for two days, right? Bank will make interest for 2 days. That's why they like T+2. If you do T+1, they make money only on 1 day. Actually, you will probably find out, which you may have seen in your banking experience, when you have a wire, when your rates were at zero, you may have found out that wires were faster to arrive in your bank account from when someone was sending you the money. Why? Because banks were not making any specific money by holding the cash. But now that interest rates are higher, you will see that it's possible that your wires may take longer, just because holding the money generates more interest rate for them. Because now holding money makes money, if that makes sense. So that's why, but I mean, the area of the T+1, we can talk about it, but it's specific to equity and bonds. And it's true that blockchain could have a contribution on it, but the real way you could see, I think, let's say an innovation in the settlement industry on the blockchain area would be on the equity area, would be the day you start to tokenize the assets. Because once you tokenize the asset, then you can do more than T+1, you can do instant settlement. And that is where it will become a big key player. Because if you start to do instant settlement, then you cut a lot of intermediaries, and that's where the blockchain becomes interesting. So that's where I think the real history or value a blockchain can bring. If you're using blockchain, you will do a settlement that will be better than T+1. Because by definition, it's instant.
Maybe it'd be helpful, maybe if you could tell us a bit about, you know, the different areas and then how blockchain can help with that. So we've mentioned a bit about equities. Maybe you could talk a bit about the other areas.
Sure. I mean, what is interesting related to blockchain is, and that's something that has been really forgotten in the digital asset space, is right now, if you look at all the effort that exists in the space, it's like if you have two worlds. You have the digital world, you know, cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and all the coins you hear. And then you have everybody else. And the problem is everybody else, including financial institutions, have their own developments related to blockchain. And every crypto-focused companies have their own development only for digital asset, which is where I believe is a big weakness. Because one of the strong innovations that we believe, that I believe in the blockchain industry, is how it can make everyday life easier. A few examples of application you can think outside the box. First, obviously, there's settlement notion. The beauty of the blockchain, it's pretty much an immutable ledger. So you could very well imagine that you have a blockchain where a lot of players hold a node. Therefore, they don't need to trust each other to confirm that assets are here to do a specific transaction. That would allow you to go in much faster because you don't need to verify if somebody has the fund it claims to have to settle a transaction because it's available on the blockchain. So that's the most obvious application you will see around that people are thinking about, which is all the effort you hear everywhere. What is kind of funny is you hear the financial world saying, oh, we just did a blockchain transaction for bonds, when it's done every single seconds on the digital world, in the crypto world, and you could do it in the normal world, in the fintech world, just by tokenizing the asset. Because if you replace an Ethereum token by a token representing Apple shares, it will still be the same transaction, right? It's just that instead of an Ethereum token, you have the representation of the Apple token. The stable coins is a good example of what it is. Stable coins is pretty much leveraging on the blockchain to make a 24/7 environment of movement of USD-backed or Euro-backed token. That's one application. So that's the most obvious one. But there is another type of application that people don't realize that actually will start to emerge because of the architecture of all the signature that you have behind the blockchain. You know, when you have a wallet, you're cryptographically signed with your wallet, a transaction. The day we're able to leverage on the technology like MPC to the layer of the individual, which is, for example, what we do with IO, then you can open up a lot of other applications that becomes interesting in the blockchain industry. For example, you could very well foresee giving tokens or identification linked to a signature, you know, a cryptographic signature, to vendors or service providers in order to reduce fraud. Because then you can use that as an authentication that will then be immutable. So you cannot claim back that you never approved this or that transaction or you never approved this or that email because you have an immutable proof on the blockchain of you signing it, right? So that is another very good application you could see in the blockchain. So if we were to summarize, it can optimize payment, cross-border payments, because you tokenize an asset, you can move it 24/7. There's an immutable ledger here and you don't need intermediaries. So that could help the unbanked. It can help accelerating settlement in equities, bonds, or any asset because, again, the immutable aspect of it, the transparency aspect of it, and the lack of intermediaries can make the transaction super fast. But it can also be used as a very good tool for fraud reduction by using implementing some authentication aspect, verification aspect related to the cryptographic aspect of signing on the blockchain and immutability aspect of it.
How far do you think financial institutions kind of, I mean, let's say maybe globally or in the US, actually are with innovating in blockchain? Because I feel like it's been quite a few years that I've like seen some quite big technology companies, for example, you know, ones that we all know the names of, talking about blockchain. Like, have financial institutions actually innovated in blockchain yet? Or is there still quite a long way to go?
Well, I would have said I see a lot of press release talking about financial institution doing things on blockchain, but then you never really see it in everyday life. Actually, for example, JP Morgan did develop a blockchain called Quorum that is based on Ethereum. It's an EVM. They sold it, I believe, to the Consensus. I do believe that banks and financial institutions still look at the blockchain and wants to explore the blockchain aspect, the approach. The problem is it will probably require them to change their business model. Because remember, banks make money on inefficiencies in a sense that there's, of course, the trust aspect of holding money in a bank, but it makes money on inefficiencies that justify all the multiple fees they charge you. A lot of those inefficiencies will be resolved, including implementing the blockchain. So for them, it's not only including the technology, it's how to change the business model around the technology. Because right now, banks have their own ledger. A core banking is a ledger. Meaning all the things that a blockchain provide in a decentralized manner, banks already have it in a centralized manner. So the problem is now if you start to tell them use a decentralized tool and, for example, start to settle between parties using the blockchain, now you won't make as much money holding the cash. You won't make as much money offering credits on a payment because you can do instant settlement. You will have a lot of intermediaries that will disappear. So there's a lot of elements there that including the blockchain is like AI now in the industry. Including AI may create a new business model and new ways of doing money they need to work on. And that will be the same for financial institutions. So are they ready? Probably. Can they do it? Yes. Have they figured out the business model? Probably not, which is why it's creating a holdup. And the biggest example you can have is the difference between the digital asset exchanges and the traditional market. When you go and trade on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange, there's a lot of data that you and I don't have access to. We just go on our website, on our bank or a banking, and we just buy or sell stock, but we don't have a lot of data. Who is long? Who is short? What is the volume, etc.? If you look into the stocks, into the digital asset exchanges, like Bitfinex, Kraken, Coinbase, you can have access to pretty much every data possible. Like how many short there is, live. What are the long position? What are the margin position? You have all the information that is available to everyone. While in the traditional market, you need to pay for it or you need to be a big customer to have access to it. You see, so that's where there's a huge difference or where the money has to be made if you start to use the blockchain over the traditional world.
Interesting. Do you use Kraken? Because I just joined Kraken and I actually really like them.
No, it's actually I know very well the people of Kraken. It's actually a good exchange. There is, I mean, it's a good exchange, and especially if you're based in Europe, they have a very good European rail for payments. So you would be able to move money quite easily there. So, it's actually a fairly good exchange. And they're good people, really good people.
So I read that you were responsible for making a leading private bank one of the first crypto-friendly banks in the whole world. This was back in 2017. What was it that made you do that, and how did that benefit that bank?
Well, in 2017, when I joined that bank, I actually discovered that they were a big, big issue for digital asset companies to be able to find proper banking. And actually, as a matter of fact, when you used to live, I used to live in the US or France before, you never think that banking is a problem because you log on yourself, you do a wire, it's done. And maybe once in a while, your bank asks you a question about a wire, but you never realize that banking is actually, I would say banking is actually a luxury for many people. As soon as you become an entrepreneur or you become and you're on the edge and trying to innovate, banks see that as a risk and they don't want to bank you. And digital asset was one of those problems in 2017. So when I joined that bank, I realized by talking to few people that reached out to the bank that they were a big, big problem here in banking digital asset enterprise. So we started to explore the possibility to offer that services. So we looked at all the risk and benefit to do that. We had to implement the new policies. We needed to understand how the industry worked. Is it really a part of money laundering or actually it's not? All those elements we had to study because it's a completely new industry with actually new parameters. So we needed to understand those in order to better serve them. And actually we did a fairly good job on that. And we were able to start to be one of the first to offer in a very limited and controlled capacity digital asset companies, normal banking services. So our goal was to try to treat them like any other companies, as long as they follow specific rules that would allow them now, the bank, to monitor the same way you would monitor the everyday companies, you would be able to monitor digital asset companies. So of course, the opportunity for that bank was to be able to open to a new industry they didn't have reached out and to have access to a new customer base. Especially when you are a leading private bank, you want to be able to access to high net worth people. And there were a lot of wealth created in that industry. So it was a pretty good fit from the historical services of that bank as well. It also allowed the bank to move faster into that new era of technology and innovation.
How can people working in banks today help bridge the gap between traditional banking and crypto banking?
Well, there is still a lot of opposition from many, many people in the banking industry toward the crypto side, but also the crypto industry. The problem is when you talk to some diehard bankers, they will tell you, "Oh, it's all a Ponzi scheme. It's all a scam. It's just magic." And when you talk to the digital asset people, the diehard digital asset, they say, "Oh, bankers are all scammers. They steal your money. They do money laundering." So the problem is you have the two extremes that hate each other, and then you have the middle ground. And both sides of the middle ground works into finding a way to bridge both worlds. So on the digital asset space is to better understand the challenges the banking world has, because blockchain can solve those. That's one of the priority we had at IO is to say blockchain allow you to solve a lot of problems around surrounding money laundering, traceability, transparency, accessibility, cost, as long as you understand the problems and try to tackle them. And on the side of the bank is to understand how digital assets work. To understand it's not just a complete pothole of money laundering and cyberpunk that goes crazy. And once you have those middle ground people wanting to find a bridge, there will be a bridge. But again, it goes down from the generation of open mind people on both sides. Because a lot of the, like I said, if you go to digital asset crazy people, I mean, not crazy people, the diehard digital asset people will hate banks, but the diehard bankers hate the crypto. And it's usually it's the middle ground that always find a solution.
What's wrong with a lot of crypto platforms today? Like, where are their weaknesses, and what can banks do to compete with them?
So that's a very good question, especially in the light of what happened in late 2022. I think the biggest, first of all, it is important to realize what those digital asset exchanges have done that is quite mind-blowing. They've been able to develop competitors of exchanges like NASDAQ or New York Stock Exchanges at a micro level, at a private level. Matching engine of exchanges like Bitfinex, Coinbase, Kraken, or even FTX at a time has nothing to be shy against a platform like NASDAQ or New York Stock Exchange. So that, from a pure technological aspect, what they've done is pretty impressive. The main issue you still have, though, is the failure you've seen in 2022 were the result of centralized institution. The same way in 2008, you had all those failure in the banking world that was linked to the centralized institution as well. As long as you put trust, you put humans. And humans can make mistakes, intentionally or non-intentionally. And I do believe that both banks and exchanges should continue to improve on transparency and self-ownership. There is all the tools and technology out there to allow better transparency and the ability to really provide self-ownership to individuals of their assets used on the platforms. And I do believe that banks need to improve on transparency, while exchanges need to improve on self-ownership. And that's where you could find banks could compete from that aspect. Now banks can compete because they're trusted. If tomorrow you said, you have your bank that offer you the ability to buy Bitcoin, you may want to go and buy it on your bank instead of going on an exchange because they still have that trust component. However, the trust component has greatly eroded and started to be weak post-2008, which is when crypto started to emerge. And the thing is, the trust component, people didn't realize that they were transferring that trust to exchanges that are less regulated than banks. So that's not a solution, right? The solution is to be able to leverage on the technology that blockchain provides and signatory technology can provide in order to find an hybrid model where you can trust a bank or an exchange from the matching aspect of buying or selling and the compliance support while you keep ownership of your asset in the process. And that is, I think, where whoever will be able to start to produce that will be a winner because you will be able to solve all the compliance challenges that is still required to control. Because you don't want to become a money laundering platform. You will be able to allow people to have liquidity to be able to buy or sell whatever they want, but yet they still keep ownership of their asset as long as they don't transact. And I think that is where the future will lie, and technology allow you to do that. It's just that it hasn't been thought under that prism yet.
Do you think banks are doing enough today to attract high net worth and ultra high net worth individuals? And what do you think they can do to improve?
Actually, it's because banks started to realize a lot of money was made in digital assets that they started to open up to digital assets. I mean, today, if you made a lot of money in digital assets, you will still have your bank because your bank will love you because you have money. Now, if you're running a digital asset company, you may have a hard time finding banking because it's highly risky. So actually, as a matter of fact, I still believe that banks is still a leader for serving high net worth and ultra high net worth people because they are actually built for that, and it's a pretty high profitable business for them. What you may want to look into is more about the fact that high net worth people and ultra high net worth people may start to be open up to the idea of having a better control of their own asset, which is where digital asset wealth manager can come up and be a leader there. That's where there may be room there for them to try to grab that market. But right now, it's a pretty well-controlled market. If you ask any wealthy digital asset investors or wealthy people, they would rather own have their money in a Merrill Lynch, Goldman Sachs, or JP Morgan, or BNP in France, than some unknown platform where they don't know about, right? That's where the legacy still play a big role into the trust in place.
So last question, if anyone really enjoyed what you had to say and they want to hear more, where can they find you?
Well, they can go on our platform, on our website, iofinnet.com. We're going to be actually more and more vocal on what we're doing. Which is surrounding the idea of trying to use blockchain and MPC technology to literally bridge digital asset space and the regular world from finance to corporates by trying to optimize what blockchain can bring and transparency and digital cryptographic signature can bring to the ecosystem. So, of course, they can go on our website and follow us on Twitter. We'll give more and more updates about what we do and what we're looking to do. And hopefully we'll add a little bit contribution to that new ecosystem that is growing.
Thanks so much for joining us, Gregory.
Thank you.
This was the FS podcast hosted by Exadel. Don't forget to follow us to hear more.